وَإِنَّ لَكُمْ فِي الْأَنْعَامِ لَعِبْرَةً نُسْقِيكُمْ مِمَّا فِي بُطُونِهِ مِنْ بَيْنِ فَرْثٍ وَدَمٍ لَبَنًا خَالِصًا لَبَنًا خَالِصًا سَائِغًا لِلشَّارِبِينَ.
Surely there is a lesson for you in the cattle. We provide you to drink out of that which is in their bellies, between the feces and the blood, pure milk, which is a palatable drink for those who take it. Surely, there is a lesson for you in the cattle. We provide you to drink out of that which is in their bellies, between the feces and the blood, pure milk. By mentioning what is in the cattle's bellies between the filth and the blood, the Quran emphasizes the point that what animals eat is transformed on the one hand into blood and on the other into feces. At the same time, she cattle produce milk which differs from both in its properties, color, smell, as well as in its uses and purpose. They produce milk in such a large quantity that it not only suffices the nutritional needs of their young ones, but also provides a palatable nutrition for human beings.
وَمِن ثَمَرَاتِ النَّخِيلِ وَالْأَعْنَابِ تَتَّخِذُونَ مِنْهُ سَكَرًا وَرِزْقًا حَسَنًا إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَةً لِقَوْمٍ يَعْقِلُونَ.
And out of the fruits of date palms and grapes, you derive intoxicants as well as wholesome sustenance. Surely, there is a sign for those who use reason. And out of the fruits of date palms and grapes, you derive intoxicants as well as wholesome sustenance. Implicit in the above verse is the fact that the juice provided by date palms and grapes serves as wholesome sustenance. Additionally, however, the same juice can be fermented so as to produce alcohol. Now it depends on man whether he prefers to derive a nutritional drink from these fruits or whether he prefers to make wine out of them, which then makes him lose his senses. It should also be noted that the verse quite subtly suggests that wine does not constitute wholesome sustenance. This is a hint of its unlawfulness.
وَأَوْحَى رَبُّكَ إِلَى النَّحْلِ أَنِ اتَّخِذِي مِنَ الْجِبَالِ بُيُوتًا وَمِنَ الشَّجَرِ وَمِمَّا يَعْرِشُونَ.
Your Lord inspired the bee, saying, "Set up hives in the mountains and in the trees and in the trellises that people put up." Your Lord inspired. The Quranic term vahi literally means making a veiled or subtle suggestion which is comprehended only by the concerned party. It is for this reason that the term was also used to convey the concepts of ilka, putting something in someone's heart. An ilham, or inspiration, for instance, teaching something under the veil of secrecy. Now God does not impart His message to His creatures in tangible forms. The message is conveyed instead in subtle modes so that the actual transmission of the message eludes people's observation. Hence, the process of revelation of the Quran has been variously expressed by terms such as ilka, ilham, and vahi. These terms, however, subsequently developed technical connotations. As a result, the term vahi began to be used to denote the message communicated to prophets, and ilham to denote the inspiration made to saints and other spiritually exalted beings. As for ilka, it has come to denote the ideas and feelings which God puts into the hearts and minds of ordinary people. The Quran, however, does not make any such distinction. Hence, it mentions the vahi made to the heavens according to which the heavens are administered. To teach heaven, he made vahi of its duty. Ha-Mim 41:12. Likewise, the earth also receives the revelation, vahi, which makes it narrate its record. On that day will it declare its tidings, for your Lord will have made the vahi. Al-Zalzala 99:4-5. Angels are also bestowed with vahi, and they function accordingly. And recall when your Lord made vahi to the angels. I am with you. Al-Anfal 8:12. Significantly, vahi is also made to the bee to set up hives in the mountains and in the trees and in the trellises that people put up. However, this kind of inspiration, vahi, is not confined to the bee alone. Such divine inspiration teaches fish to swim, birds to fly, and newborn to suckle. Also, whenever man hits upon sound opinion or the right way to help him out of a situation without resort to the normal processes of reflection and investigation, this also constitutes a form of wahi. It is in this sense that the mother of Moses, peace be upon him, received wahi. So we sent wahi to the mother of Moses to suckle him. Al-Qasas 28:7. In this sense, no one is deprived of wahi. All major achievements of rulers and statesmen and all significant discoveries and inventions reflect this kind of wahi. Many ordinary human beings also encounter experiences which show that they received direct guidance from on high. Sometimes a person suddenly finds that some idea has made an inroad into his heart, or he intuitively feels inclined to take a certain step, or receives a suggestion in his dream and subsequently discovers that all that was instrumental in providing him with right guidance come to him from an unidentifiable source. Of the many forms of wahi, one special form is the revelation which is specifically communicated to prophets. This form of wahi radically differs from other forms. In this kind of wahi, one to whom it is communicated is fully cognizant of the fact that guidance is from God. The recipient is fully convinced that it is from God. This kind of wahi consists of guidance embodying beliefs, injunctions, and directives, with the help of which prophets are able to guide mankind.
يخرج من بطونها شراب مختلف ألوانه فيه شفاء للناس إن في ذلك لآية لقوم يتفكرون.
Then suck the juice of every kind of fruit, and keep treading the ways of your Lord, which have been made easy. There comes forth from their bellies a drink varied in colors, wherein there is a healing for men. Verily, there is a sign in this for those who reflect. Then suck the juice of every kind of fruit, and keep treading the ways of your Lord, which have been made easy. To keep treading the ways of the Lord which have been made easy refers to the entire system and procedure followed by a group of bees. The design of their hives, the organization of their groups, the astonishing division of labor among them, their constant and well-regulated movements to produce, carry, and store honey represent the ways which have been made easy for them by God. They have been so well prepared to undertake this task that they do not even have to reflect for a moment about the acts in which they engage. There is a well-known, thoroughly regulated procedure which they have been following down the ages to keep these innumerable small honey-making factories in operation so as to produce a sweet source of sustenance. There comes forth from their bellies a drink varied in colors, wherein there is a healing for men. Honey is too useful and tasty an item of food to need any explicit mention. However, the healing properties of honey are relatively less known. This aspect, therefore, was brought to light. Honey is inherently useful in the treatment of certain diseases, for it preserves the juice and glucose of flowers and fruits in its best form for a long time. Additionally, honey has certain properties which prevent it from rotting. It also serves as a preservative and keeps other things fresh for a long time. It's for this reason that it has been used for centuries in the pharmaceutical industry in place of alcohol. If bees have their hives at a place where there is an abundance of a particular herb, honey will contain the essence of that herb. The honey is so produced will therefore be useful for the treatment of those ailments for which that herb is used. If bees are systematically employed for pharmaceutical purposes, and the honey containing the essence of different herbs is preserved, it will possibly be much more useful than the medicines produced in laboratories. Verily, there is a sign in this for those who reflect. The present discourse aims at corroborating the second part of the Prophet's call. The unbelievers and polytheists oppose the Prophet, peace be upon him, on two grounds. First, he preached the doctrine of life after death, which calls for moral transformation. Second, he emphasized that God alone is worthy of worship and obedience, that he alone has the power to remove their distress and heed their complaints. This strikes at the very roots of the way of life founded on polytheism and atheism. Attention is drawn here to the natural phenomena which bear testimony to the truth behind both aspects of the prophet's teachings. The above discourse invites man to reflect over the signs around him. People should seriously think whether they lend support to the truth of the prophet's statement regarding God's unity and afterlife, or whether they lend support to the superstitions and fancies of the polytheists. The prophet, peace be upon him, vociferously states that after his death man will be resurrected. The unbelievers contemptuously dismiss this as utterly impossible. However, as soon as the first drops of rain fall on the earth, it is fully established that resurrection is not only logically possible, but is also a recurrent phenomenon. The prophet, peace be upon him, also forcefully states that the universe has a God who created it and holds sway over it. This is denied by atheists as a claim unsupported by any evidence. One has only to consider the design and function of cattle, of dates and grapes and bees, and it would be quite evident that all has been created by the all-wise and all-merciful Lord. Had it not been so, how would it have been possible for the cattle, the trees, and the bees to join hands in producing such a fine, delicious, and nutritious thing for man with such unfailing regularity? The prophet, peace be upon him, also emphatically states that it is God whom they should worship, upon whom they should lavish all praise, and whom they should always thank. This is resented by the polytheists who insist on making offerings to their numerous deities. However, can one truly say that anyone other than God provided them with milk, dates, grapes, and honey, which furnished them with the best kind of nourishment? Is it true that it is not the one true God, but rather gods, goddesses, and saints who made the elaborate arrangements for man's subsistence that we observe?
وَاللَّهُ خَلَقَكُمْ ثُمَّ يَتَوَفَّاكُمْ وَمِنْكُمْ مَنْ يُرَدُّ إِلَىٰ أَرْذَلِ الْعُمُرِ لِكَيْ لَا يَعْلَمَ بَعْدَ عِلْمٍ شَيْئًا إِنَّ اللَّهَ عَلِيمٌ قَدِيرٌ
Allah has created you, and then He causes you to die. Some of you have your lives prolonged to an abject old age, when one loses all knowledge after having acquired it. Allah is all-knowing, all-powerful. Allah has created you, and then He causes you to die. Not only are the arrangements for man's sustenance and growth entirely in God's hand, but God alone also has total control over man's life and death. No one else has the power to grant life nor to cause death. Some of you have your lives prolonged to an abject old age, when one loses all knowledge after having acquired it. Man is proud of his knowledge, and his knowledge indeed distinguishes him from other creatures. It must be remembered that even knowledge is bestowed upon man by none other than God. It is a common sight, and yet highly instructive, that in old age even the wisest person who, in his younger days, imparted wisdom to others, is reduced to a mere lump of flesh. Gone is all his sharpness. His senses become dull, rendering him incapable of even looking after his ordinary affairs.